following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the fourth episode of the Infernal Legion podcast. I'm joined, as always, by Dwayne Burns and Warlock Jeff Ivins, our wonderful producer extraordinaire. And I figured that today, instead of talking about our organization and what we're doing, I thought that it'd be more appropriate to open today's episode by remembering September the 11th, 2001. As most of you listening to this know, unless you're living under a rock, we just passed the 18th anniversary of the attacks, and it always brings to mind certain feelings in everybody. And I think that today we have three very unique perspectives on 9/11. Dwayne was in the military when the attacks happened. Jeff was out of the military, and I was getting ready to join the military. So we have three completely different perspectives on what those attacks meant to our careers and our path moving forward. So, gentlemen, if you don't mind indulging me, let's discuss that and what kind of impact that 9/11 had on our lives.
Dwayne, go first.
Thanks a lot. The impact on my life, well... I drank a lot when I saw it happen. I drank a lot after it happened. I got woke up that morning with Dwayne. A plane hit a building out in New York, World Trade Center. And I'm like, all right, so it was probably a little Cessna, you know, no big deal. I mean, sorry about it happening, no big deal. I went back to sleep. Dwayne, another plane hit. What the fuck? My ass was up out of bed. And, yeah, it was a long day, long bunch of days of drinking.
Right. was there an immediate call? Because you were in the National Guard at the time. Was there... like an immediate call out to get to the armory, or did they wait a while till they figured it out?
There was no immediate call out. And at the time, I was up in Lakewood, which is up by Cleveland. It's a suburb of Cleveland. And I was right outside the airport. I mean, there were people calling in, volunteering, I'll come down and help secure shit. I'll come down, do this, do that. I'll tell you one interesting thing that happened that day, and people tell me I'm full of shit. I looked off to the east, and I swear to God, I saw that plane that
the one in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yes, because you saw it go straight up in the air like if it was a rocket, and then straight down. And I mean, wings, nose, everything straight down. You don't see planes do that. And I mean, I can see it out the distance from Lakewood. It was a hell of a day.
So when was the first time that you kind of felt the military, at least the part that you were in, responding to that?
Well, I immediately wanted to pack up and go take care of business, as it would, you know.
Did your, was there any, like at your next drill or anything, was there like special briefings on it or anything like that?
A lot of be quiet.
Right.
A lot of, you know, this is happening, but it isn't happening. Be quiet.
Warning order.
The cow. Right. You know, your little warning order, your call on the phone, the cow crosses the road slowly. Shit. Was it slowly, or the cow ran his ass across the road and meant we're going somewhere?
What's today's challenge in the password? So what about you, Jeff? You had been out of the Navy for how long when 9/11 happened?
Let's say 2001. I got out in 95, so about 6 years.
So at this point, you are a well-adjusted civilian.
Well-adjusted is an overstatement.
Right.
Is it over or under? Jesus.
I don't know. It's one of those two. I was still dealing with a lot of shit anyway, but...
Right, I got you.
My other half was in the bedroom and yelled out to me and said, "Hey, the plane just hit the World Trade Center." I turn on the TV and you can ask my other half this. This is exactly what I said. This is a terrorist attack.
Was that on the first plane?
When I saw the first plane, the first plane hit. And he's going, "No, you're full of shit." And I'm like, "No, this is a terrorist attack." And then the second plane hit. I said, "Duh."
Well, like I said, when the first plane hit, I thought it was something like what happened, back in the 40s? A plane hit the Empire State Building.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I figured it was, you know, pilot error, oh shit, this sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I feel for the people, but, you know, I went back to sleep when the first plane hit. I did.
But, no, like I said, I sat there and I was like, okay, I've already done my 8 years of active duty, so they can't call me back in. But, you know, do I want to try to lose the weight that I had gained over the years
and try to
re-enlist as a crypto tech again?
At the time, I think they put age waivers in, too, to get people in.
Yeah, I believe, like, right after... when they announced that we were going to invade Afghanistan, they relaxed a lot of standards in order to get people.
They sure did.
Just not the weight standards.
Right. Right. So did you still have, you did 8 years in the Navy, you only been out for what, about six? So, did you still have buddies that were serving at the time?
Most of the people that I knew, they were in. Maybe one or two of them had also gotten out too. So, I don't even talk to the people. I've got a couple friends on Facebook that I served with, but they were like either in Edsel, Scotland, or Guam, or something like that.
Right. Yeah, it's the Navy. They were already out there doing things. Oh man. So now, because you live in a coastal area, did you see like the bases around you going into lockdown or anything like that?
I was living in just outside of Atlanta at the time, and there's an air base up there, and they started putting up barricades, you know, the cement barricades. Mm-hmm. They were putting them up in the entrances to the base, and heightened security watches and stuff like that. They would carry, you know, all instead of carrying a pistol, they would actually be carrying rifles.
Yeah. So they really upped their force protection measures.
Oh yeah. Well, the base is Dobbins Air Base, Air Reserve Base, and it's basically where they were testing a lot of the planes. And it's like for military, it was the largest runway the military has.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, that's where the planes that do the things like fly into the hurricanes and things like that, that's where they're based out of, isn't it?
No, not there. They're not based out of there. But that's where they would, you know, one of the places they would go to if they needed to.
Gotcha. Oh, for emergency landing.
Yeah, I think hurricane planes are actually further west. It doesn't make any sense because they have hardly any hurricanes out on the west coast, but I think they're further west.
No, there's some in Alabama, and I think there's a couple in the southern states. That's about it.
Yeah.
But no, this is it. Remember when the the plane went down in China, our spy plane?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, after the Chinese gave it back to us in pieces, after they dissected it.
After we R&D'd the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
Like you do.
Yeah. Their biggest plane had all the pieces of that spy plane in its plane, and it had to land at Dobbins.
Yeah, that was like one of them Russian planes. What the hell are those called?
What, the Bears?
No, the big ones that's got like six engines on each side.
Yeah.
It was in 2012, that movie.
Yeah.
So basically, they had all those plane parts inside of a bigger plane.
Yeah, basically.
Yes, that was insignificant information. It's just me babbling. Yeah.
But
I'm gonna find out what the fuck that plane is. So
Dwayne was sitting when the planes hit. Dwayne was sitting basically as a civilian. I mean, you were National Guard, so at the time you weren't on duty, but you were basically given the heads up that you might be going any second. And Jay Nothing was considering reenlistment, because it was such a heavy moment. And of course, there's me, the youngin' in the group, who was sitting in biology class when it happened. But I'd already been in talks. I knew, like, from a very young age that I was going to join the military when I was able to. So I'd already been talking with the recruiter and setting everything up and getting the initial paperwork running. Things of that nature. But yeah, when that happened, I think it was a moment of, we had for a very long time been, with rare exception, at peacetime. I mean, there was little things like Bosnia and Mogadishu that kicked off here and there. But for the most part, there wasn't any major conflicts happening that we were directly involved in. And so I was all set and ready to go. And I think that when the second plane hit, because the news was reporting it, they didn't know what had happened. It could have been an accident or something like that. When the second plane hit is, I think, when the realization hit me that if I do this, I'm going to war.
Yeah.
and you know, it's funny now on the back end of three deployments to look at it and go, like, that was a terrifying thought back then. Now it's second nature. It's we all do what we do in the military, but at the time, as a high school kid watching this happen on the news, it's kind of a heavy thought to have that I'm going to sign some paperwork in about 6 months that says that I'm going to have to go overseas and deal with this. And I wasn't really sure where I was going to go with that. And then, of course, they initialized the Iraqi invasion while I was in basic training. So then it was double down on that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was... I think that everyone has a story to remember from 9/11.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What's up?
How much retraining did they have to take you back through before they sent you? Because, I mean, I'm sure... Before I went, we had to do a lot of vehicle boxing of vehicles, vehicle combat. You know, we're driving unidentifiable objects on the side of the road. You know,
well, most of when I went through basic and AIT, most of the training was set up because you know how the military works; they always work with the last conflict. So most of our training was set up.
The last conflict, we had Desert Storm. We're fucked.
Right. Well, but at the same time, it's the same country. So,
yeah. You know,
so a lot of it was set up for that. There wasn't a lot of new information coming down. I mean, IEDs had just been identified as a threat, but they, at the time, weren't killing as many as
they were. No, they were putting them in water bottles with tar. Yeah. And
now, eventually...
They graduated to the 155.
Right. Anyone who followed the war knows that eventually IEDs became the biggest killer of soldiers out there. But at the time, that wasn't the concern. You know, military, hindsight, 2020.
worthless information. That Russian cargo plane is called an Antonov.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
I'm one of those people that if I'm trying to figure something out and I can't fucking figure it out and I know the info, it's going to bug me until I...
It was interesting, though, when I got off the bus when we went across the tracks and I was ushered off the cattle cart, basically, the drill sergeants, one of the first things they told us is that 100% of you are going to deploy. And they were very, like, deadly serious about that. And, I mean, these drill sergeants hadn't even, well, one of them had just gotten back from a deployment, but most of them hadn't even had a chance to deploy to this conflict. So there was, it's almost like a sense of desperation in them to make sure that we were actually prepared for it.
Yeah.
Which I think made my basic training experience better. Not easier by any stretch, but better, because they were actually focusing on something that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, they were OJT and a lot of truck drivers.
Yeah.
Do you know where the gas is? Do you know where the brake is? This is a clutch. Can you go forward? Can you go backwards? Congratulations, you are now an 88 Mike 10.
Secondary MOS.
And for those of you who don't know, or could be Navy, like Mr. J. Nothing, 88 Mike's the identifier for your truck driving school. That's all that is.
I had a damn MOS.
Yeah,
but you guys call yours a wraith, and it doesn't count.
Right.
Well, 91
characters long.
No. I was a 9185.
Oh, so you guys use the same number code like the Marines do, basically.
Generally. Yeah, well, you got to remember, Marines are part of the Navy, whether they like to admit it or not.
I was going
to
say, don't tell them that.
Yeah. Who signs your check, Marines? Right. It's called the Department of the Navy. But, well, no, 9185 is what my MOS was.
So I think it's important every year. And I got a little bit of flack when I made the Infernal Legion 9/11 remembrance post, because obviously there's some aspects of what happened that call into question. I mean, the 9/11 commission report was anything but clear.
Yeah.
and there was a lot of stuff that happened, and I understand that people want to react and they want to think about all these things, but you know, for me as a veteran who this, you know, directly impacted at the moment, and you know, Dwayne, you're in the same boat.
Yeah.
It's fine to think about the conspiracy theories. It's fine to question your government. In fact, I think everyone should at some point question their government. But there's a whole lot of significance with that day that has nothing to do with whether the official story is right or wrong. And I really think that when September 11th rolls around every year, I'd rather focus on what we do know. And what we do know is that, you know, many of us directly fought in the war that followed that attack.
Yeah.
And that's something heavy to think about, something heavy to consider.
Whether you're an infantryman or a cook over there, you fought.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one thing these wars did for sure, is they got rid of the idea of a front line. There was no more front line, that's
no.
For sure. All right, well, before we move on to our next segment and we introduce our guest for this episode, Dwayne, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about the VA clothing allowance and how veterans could get into that. So why don't you go ahead and give us an overview of that and what people could do.
VA clothing allowance. You guys are classified, percentage disabled. You are entitled to a clothing allowance. This is for anything that could be from putting creams on your body to little prosthetics such as knee braces or prosthetics. Clothing allowance generally comes out in August. It just happened. If you guys are going to get it going again, you better get it going now, just due to how the VA... likes to drag its feet. New program that's come down the pipe. There is a second clothing allowance now being allowed by the VA for people with severe need for PTSD for their clothing allowance, i.e. the people who have no legs, that have the metal prosthesis, things of that nature. So actually, there's a second day clothing allowance that has come down the pipe so that if you are already getting one, get in there and apply for your second one. You're entitled to it, and there is back pay associated with it.
So is this one of the benefits where a veteran would benefit from having, let's say, a representative for him or herself, or is it something they can just fill out online and submit?
If your doctor has prescribed for you a knee brace for your pants, that knee brace wears those pants out.
Right.
It does, whether you wear it underneath or over here. It wears them out. The VA realizes that. You go and you apply with the prosthesis department, with the prosthetics department. There's a form there. You fill it out. They verify that, yes, Jeff Bowling has a knee brace or he has a prosthetic leg. We verified that, and they go in the computer, and they and the second week of August, you get a check for nearly $1,000.
Nice.
Now, as I said, they have just added a second clothing allowance. And I went and I did my homework on it because I thought, okay, they give you one in August. When did they give you the other one? In
like April? March or May, yeah.
No, they give it all to you all at once in August. You'll get just a double pay in August. And like I say, it is the program's been going since 2008. So if you've been eligible since 2008, you got a shitload of back pay.
Nice.
So
now, I'm assuming the back pay would also come in August with everything else.
Well, back pay comes whenever they give it to you.
Right. Okay.
generally it's different than your monthly pay, but yeah, I mean back pay will come as back pay when they okay you, and then when your next payment is due August 2020, you will get your pay then.
Right, so it's going to come with everything else. Gotcha. Okay.
No, it's not going to come with everything else.
No.
If you get okayed for it and they verify, they go back and check your back pay. Once they take that 4-6 months, whatever it takes for them to do all that damn paperwork, and they put the keystrokes in, you will get that check.
Oh, okay.
And then when August 2020 comes around, you'll start getting your regular. Yes,
gotcha.
Sir.
Okay, I'm tracking. All right. Very cool. So, for anyone who's listening and wants to check out the clothing allowance, if you go to your e-benefits page or visit your local VA, and you have any questions, obviously our man with the plan, Mr. Dwayne Burns, is here to help and answer any questions you may or may not have. So make sure you reach out to us, and we'll get him in touch with you.
And like Jeff said, with the e-benefits, that's a good way to go, but a lot of people get scared off by it. I'm telling you, if your doctor has prescribed something for you, you have a prosthesis, just go to the prosthetics department and get the paper. They'll verify that you have no arm. They will verify you have no leg. Whatever. They will verify that you put on a certain cream that stains your shirts. Everything goes through prosthetics, but they will verify all of that. Once verified, money in the bank.
Oh, actually, that's a good question about that. Is there, like, so you said there's a second one for extreme cases, like, for example, missing a limb. But for the, like, for the regular clothing allowance, is there, like, a graded system? Like, okay, a cream would run you this much.
Negative. You either are eligible or you're not eligible.
What's the percentage level that you need to be at to get it?
I believe, and I'll have to check my sources because I'm not right on everything, but I believe once you hit 20%,
okay,
you start to become eligible for all the nice little bennies. You get your little ID card, you get your, you know, all your nice little things, your service connected, put on your ID card, all your nice little things. They all start kicking in around 20%.
Okay.
And once you hit 20%, you can hit 100% because you just got to get the rest of your paperwork done and get it all in there.
Right. Very cool. So, yeah, like I said, if anyone has any questions about that, feel free to reach out to the Infernal Legion. We'll put you in touch with Dwayne. and make sure that gets handled. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with the Legionnaire of the Month. So thank you guys for listening right here on Radio Free State.
Why start your mornings early when you can sleep in late and wake up later to a freshly brewed cup of Radio Free Satan? Radio Free Satan is infernally roasted with a complex taste to suit your indulgence. It's sinful. That's why it tastes great. So pour yourself another helping of this podcast and others at RadioFreeSatan.com.
Take a trip back to the 1980s with me, Warlock Jeff Ivins, on the Metro Radio Free Satan's show, highlighting the new wave and other hits from the indulgent decade, only on RadioFreeSatan.com.
Okay, Wikipedia search, hardcore punk genres. What do we have? Christian hardcore? No, thank you. Mathcore? What the? Nintendo core? Really? Ah, forget it. I'm just gonna play stuff I like. This is Citizen Matt, your host for Furious Sound. Join me as I explore 40-plus years of angst-ridden punk rock from, well, most of the subgenres, right here on Radio Free Satan.
Attention iTunes users, if you like this show and other programs from Radio Free Satan, then please take a moment to look us up on iTunes to rate and comment on the program. You can also do the same on Stitcher.com. Look up this program on Stitcher.com, rate it, and give us a review. And that's if you like the show, of course, you know, that you want to give it 5 stars and a good review, not, you know, give it 1 star and say a bunch of mean things. But hey, if you want to do that, then I'm sure there are a bunch of Christian podcasts on iTunes that you could do that on. Anyway, thank you for your support of RadioFreeSatan.com, and now back to the program.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Infernal Legion podcast. It is time for us to introduce the Legionnaire of the Month. So without further ado, welcome a United States Navy veteran and a newly promoted active member of the Church of Satan, finally. Mr. Rick Kohlmeyer is with us today. Rick, how the hell you doing?
I'm doing good, I guess. Post-surgery, so just kind of relaxing.
Yeah, Rick was very nervous about doing this podcast because he's on pain meds right now and he didn't know how he'd sound.
So just bear with him. Don't worry about it. It's a fucking circle of jerks here.
I don't even drink, so I don't like when they give me the... I'm on fucking oxycodone, so my brain is going.
Oh, nice.
Someone give him the good stuff.
Brother, you ain't got the good stuff yet. VA had me at my highest point on 100 milligram morphine tablets a day.
I'd probably be dead.
When I stopped taking them, I felt dead. Withdrawals.
And they wonder why there's an opioid crisis.
Yep.
A little bit.
But anyway.
Well, that's another thing.
Why don't we go back in time to when you're a young man and you're getting ready to start your life? What made the military look appealing to you?
Well, I grew up in the military, so I actually was not a fan of it because I spent probably the first 10 years of my life going, "Where's Dad?" Looking back on it, you know, there's some sentimental moments standing on the docks waiting for the ships to come in and stuff, but I had actually gone a complete different direction in my teenage years, was not even thinking military until I got married at a young age and had a kid coming on the way, and I said, you know what, this is a good choice to make. So it was for the paycheck. It was something I was familiar with. I literally walked in and I had to laugh because the chief at the recruiting station was a petty officer that worked under my father before he'd got out. So when he heard my name, he came walking around the corner and asked me if I was his son, and I said, yeah, don't give me the bullshit lines, just give me the paper.
So, why Navy?
Again, well, my dad was in the Navy. I had an uncle in the Navy. My stepmother was in the Navy. My grandfather on my mother's side was in the Navy. It was pretty much
salt water
tradition.
In your veins, basically.
Yeah. I mean, hell, I was born on a frickin' beach in Florida, so I got the ocean in my veins.
Right. So you make the enlistment process, and I don't know how it works with the Navy. Did you get to choose your rate, or did they just assign you with something?
Yeah, I got to choose, but then it became a cluster because I was supposed to be a yeoman submariner.
Okay.
Well, my orders ended up getting changed when I graduated from A school in Mississippi, and they said, we don't want you to go subs right now. We're moving the Naval Air Technical Training Center from Millington, Tennessee, down to Pensacola, Florida. We want you to be our BRAC yeoman. So I was supposed to go subs and go to sea, but I never got to do that.
So you served in the Navy and never even got to see be on the ocean, I should say.
Yeah, they sent me home to Florida.
Oh, man. I did 8.5 years, and 5 of them were sea duty.
Yeah, I wanted to go to sea. When they got done with the BRAC transfer and the command was fully transferred and CNET was happy, I had requested to go to sea, and they sent me to VT2 Whiting Field in Milton, Florida, which is, I guess you could say, it's pretty much the asshole of Florida.
Yeah.
There's nothing there except an E-Club and a whole bunch of trailer parks outside the base.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a nightmare because then I had to do my first command. I was dealing with enlisted students. That's easy. Command enlisted student. My worst nightmare.
Yeah, I always find it interesting how it's the enlisted guys that end up training the officers usually. Like,
oh, yeah.
Who thought that was a good idea?
The hard part, you know, they would come in just because they screwed up on their flight and they failed a particular class that they were supposed to be doing. They'd come in and throw their flight jacket at me, and I'm like, fucking excuse me, sir.
Well, excuse the fuck out of me.
I kind of got pulled into the captain's office a couple times for lighting up his officers.
What's worse than that is being an E7 and having an E6 under your command, and he turns around and goes and takes the E6 to O1.
LDF.
What we call a traitor, Dwayne.
Yeah.
Yes.
I believe the official.
Well, he turned out to come back to be my platoon leader, my fucking butter bar.
Oh, hell no.
It didn't work.
I bet.
Like, fuck you, sir.
Yeah, I would say that. I told a guy who went LDS, he was crypto. He was an R brancher first, then he made first class, went to Fork and Spoon School, and he went back out to the fleet as an officer. I told he threatened me with captain's mask. I was like, ain't like I ain't fucking been there before.
Well, it was funny with me because he threatened me, and I said, you see this? I'm an E7. You ain't got enough shit on your collar to take my rank away. It takes an 06 to take my rank away, so fuck you, sir.
Last I checked, it took an act of Congress to take a chief's rank.
It is.
I think that's what they like to tell us. Yeah. So how long did you end up staying in the Navy?
I did a little over 3 years. I ended up getting out in 98, which was a whole big clusterfuck, but had a lot to do with my rating being overmanned 125%, and
can't get promoted.
Well, that was my biggest problem. Was I was passing my tests. They couldn't keep me out of trouble because I had a huge drinking problem.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough to get the hell out of the Navy without getting a dishonorable.
Well, hey, that's the trick, man.
Like your previous guest, Eric, a friend of mine, I'd got the general under honorable conditions.
Yeah.
You know,
I was happy I could help him with that. He didn't understand that. He thought he was still under a general discharge. No. I was glad I could help him with that. Hey, man, as long as you kept your nose clean for 6 months, you're good.
I think it was like 10 years later we were finally telling him this.
Yeah. Mark's honorable for two decades.
did you see he ran around within a week, had a different job, and all this shit with his weapons stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was, hey, I'm not general anymore.
So, let's talk about Satanism for a moment, because obviously, like I said, you've been a member of the Church of Satan for a little while, and you just got your active membership application approved.
Mm-hmm.
Got the fancy certificate and all that. When did you discover Satanism?
I first discovered it probably about 30 years ago in a bookstore. I always enjoyed reading, and I was the typical stereotypical Satanist, and I come from that horrible Catholic background. it was beaten into me. But I remember seeing that book one day, and I grabbed a copy of that book. And I was 12 or 13 years old when I first cracked it open, and it spoke to me, but not at a level that it does now, because I obviously have a lot better understanding of life and everything at this point. And it's a book that I went back and forth to many times over the years. And, you know, I have a very long path going from, you know, being a pagan to, you know, theistic Satanism to, I mean, all across the board before I finally settled back down several years ago, probably about 8-9 years ago now, and actually sat down and reread that book for probably the 20th time, and this time it just kicked inside of my head, and I went, you know, this is what the hell I've been searching for years. And I'd started to form my life around it. I've always lived my life as a Satanist. I mean, everything I do is for myself, to better myself, for, you know, obviously for me and then for my family, take responsibility for all of my actions, you know, and to live a very, purposeful life. And then it was almost 2 years ago I decided to turn in the registered application, and I did that so that I could join the church. But it took me a while to turn in the active application because I had a tainted past that I thought would stop me. But, you know, I got an email from Central that told me they take everything on a case-by-case basis and to go ahead and send in the application.
Yeah, I find that's a fairly common story with some people. Anyone who kind of had a misspent youth, as it were. It's crazy that people don't think, you know, this is a religion of individuality, of individualism. So, of course, they're going to look at you as an individual and judge you based on that. But, you know, I understand, and honestly, if it takes a little bit more time to fill out the application, it probably ends up reading better. Well, speaking of the application, what joke did you put?
I would honestly, it was, I don't know any great jokes. It was just a cheesy joke that makes my grandson laugh all the time. You know, because I don't have any of the good bathroom humor anymore. I mean, all my jokes are based around telling them to my, 2 and 5 year old grandsons, and I'm just a grandpa.
You've blown right past dad jokes into grandpa jokes.
Well, the dad, I still bust out the dad jokes, but my wife rolls her eyes, and, you know, most of our children are adults that just tell me to shut the fuck up.
Well, Jeff, here's the question. What was your joke?
I never filled out an active membership application.
What?
Yeah. I joined, and I just left it at that. I registered back in 2004 and joined and never bothered with it. Once I got the card, for me, it was just like, okay, cool. Now I'm a part of this.
Yeah.
And I never really kept in touch with anyone. There were a few, like, you know, the more public members, obviously, I had on, like, you know, social media friends lists and things like that. But I never really talked to or spoke with the church, or I didn't attend any functions because I was always deployed or working when they were happening. And then, what was it, 2 years ago when Reverend Campbell had his Warlock of the Year thing, somehow I got nominated and ended up in second place, and that's where I think everyone found out what I had been doing the whole time. And so, yeah, I'm one of those rare people who never filled out the application and just got seen.
Okay, I found my joke if you really want to know that bad.
Yes, yes.
What do you get when you cross an agnostic, a dyslexic, and an insomniac?
No idea.
A person who stays up all night wondering if there really is a dog.
Whoa!
Told you, all I know is cheesy jokes.
Yeah, I think I'd use a George Carlin joke on mine.
Nice. Always a winner.
Oh, yeah.
He was the best.
I'm a Carlinite, so...
What about you, Dwayne? What joke did you put down?
You know what? If you can see me on my camera, I've got my application in front of me, and I'm actually going
through it. The master of the paperwork doesn't have everything digitized and very easily accessible?
Well, fuck.
That's the only reason I found mine so quick. I knew where the PDF of my application was.
Well, I know where it is, too, but I have all the paperwork here, too.
That's so 1990s, Dwayne.
I like watching Dwayne squint at his paperwork.
Yeah.
Well, go fuck yourself.
All right, well, while Dwayne hunts down that joke, Rick, what's your favorite story from the Navy?
Favorite story from the Navy? Man, there were so many fun times, but I think probably the one that probably kicked me in the gut the most, and not trying to sound like some emotional fuck or anything, but the chief that I got in boot camp found out who my father was, so ended up riding the living hell out of me, because my dad was a very well-decorated master chief. With a great career. So I spent months as Master Chief's daughter. I was ridiculed, beat down. I thought that this man hated me. I mean, he did everything in the world to get me to tap out. I don't know how many disciplinary actions I had to go through with that guy because I couldn't do anything right. When I finally graduated, he came up and he shook my hand and he said that he was glad that he couldn't break me because he thought I was going to make a great sailor. And that was probably one of the happiest moments. I mean, the rest of mine involved pretty much me being me, not being able to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people understand the nature of tough love in the military.
No.
And how it really is rewarding when someone who's just been kicking your ass up and down for years in some cases says they're proud of you. You know, like that, it really does mean the world. It shouldn't, probably, but it does.
He was just a salty dog old chief, and you know, I'd found out later that we were his last push before he went back out to sea before retirement. You know, and then on top of that, I had found out that, because he came in one day, I'd been in boot camp maybe all of 2 weeks, and he came in, and he called me up, he's like, Seaman Recruit Kohlmeyer, and I'm like, yes, chief, and he goes, son to Master Chief Larry Kohlmeyer? I'm like, yes, chief. And he goes, ho, ho, and he just clapped his hands and started grinning. I went, what the fuck? And he's like, we have a Master Chief's daughter here. You're fucking damn near royalty. And it didn't end for about 2 more months.
Right on. So when you transitioned out, was it an easy process for you? Did you act, acclimatize to civilian life pretty quickly, or... was there some hangups?
It was rough, but not because of the military action, because, I mean, I served in between wars, obviously. Mm-hmm. We had already finished with Desert Storm, Desert Shield, and we had not gotten to 9/11 yet. So I was right in between all of it. The hard part I had transitioning with was trying to maintain doing the right thing. In the respect that, you know, I'd just gotten out of the Navy, barely gotten that honorable discharge, you know, try and get a job and try and do things right, or revert back to a lifestyle that I'd had for years as a teenager and a younger man, because I used to be a real big fuck-up drug dealer, all kinds of stupid crap. But, and to mix it all up, I was a horrible alcoholic at the time and also going through a divorce, so... Needless
so
to
life
say,
was good.
1998 was a very rough year for me. But and, well, and my, because my ex had taken off while I was on base one day, and I came home. It was on base housing. It was about half empty, and my daughter was missing. So that was a kick in the nuts.
Mm.
So I asked the guys during the first segment to tell their recollections of 9/11, because since you brought it up, I'll ask you the same thing. You've been out for about 4 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
What went through your mind when you saw the planes hit the towers and the Pentagon?
I was very shocked. I was living out west when that happened, so it was very early in the morning for me. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, it seemed surreal. Because I was like, this really can't be happening. You know, I think it was 5 o'clock in the morning for me, my time. If memory serves, it was 5 or 6. I don't remember what time change we were on at that point, because Arizona doesn't change time.
Right.
But when I finally saw the second plane hit and watched all of it unfolding, I was actually angered, because part of my discharge, because I, you know, had a drinking issue, was I could not go back in without getting written approval from the Secretary of the Navy. Because I instantly wanted to go back.
Yeah,
right. You know, I'm not really the let's save everybody's life type of person, but I do love my country.
Mm.
And I don't like when we get fucked with.
Yep.
You know, I'm just a very, I'm a fighty person by nature.
Rick Fighty Person Kohlmeyer.
Yeah, my wife has to jerk my chain quite a bit, because I get angry.
All right, Dwayne, did you find that joke yet?
Yeah, and I don't know that I want to share it.
Oh, come on. You got to do it now.
Jesus saves, get it?
Oh, I wonder how some of us get accepted.
Yeah, I know.
Fuck you.
But no, I mean, to go back on your question, I mean, unfortunately, we're all old enough. We saw that building get attacked how many times in our lives?
Yeah, no lie.
Before they finally successfully did it, I mean, they tried through garages, they tried from sidewalks. I mean, unfortunately, the region of the world where this came from has been a hotbed for terrorist attacks and wars for thousands of years.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one thing, and I guess we can kind of talk about that a little bit more in the next segment, but that's one thing I don't think a lot of people realize, that we've been directly engaged in conflict with Muslim
extremists.
The Middle East.
Yeah, since Thomas Jefferson was the president. So
they've
and
been
maybe
engaged with themselves for thousands of years.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a whole mess that people don't really see. You know, it's pretty cut and dry for most. I think for most civilians, like, well, we don't want to be at war, so pull the troops out. It's not always that easy.
No, it's not.
But,
well, then what happens when they're allowed to grow because there's nobody there keeping them in check?
Yep. Right, and that's actually something we're going to talk about first up on the next section. So, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again for listening. We got Rick Kohlmeyer. Oh, another thing I forgot to mention about Rick. He runs the servers for our website, for the Infernal Legion website. So Rick Kohlmeyer is kind of an Infernal Legion extraordinaire, and we love having him around.
Does all the hard work.
I just usually scream at the ceiling. That's what I
do. And he has a knockout, beautiful wife.
My wife is freaking hot.
Yeah.
She is, man.
Does have a gorgeous woman.
I scored there. Lesser magic, hard at work.
Well, thank you guys for listening once again, and we'll be right back after this break to talk about some military and veteran news.
Clint Mephisto coming at you, two-fisted from the Double Cross Ranch. Got a beer in one hand, a microphone in the other.
What, are you in love with my ass or something?
The Chick Hagan Road Show, the finest in rockabilly, psychobilly, vintage country, swamp rock, surf rock, doo-wop.
Well, man, it is now official.
Chick Hagan Road Show, Radio Free Satan.
This is Reverend Gene, the host of Vox Satane, exclusively on Radio Free Satan. Join me every week as we indulge in the classical side of music spanning the past 1,000 years. Voxatani has already featured over 700 composers covering medieval, baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary music, including chant, choral, opera, keyboard, and orchestral music, with composers ranging from Gluck to Gilmour, Bach to Bellavance, Talis to Taverner, and Paganini to Pärt. Get your weekly recommended dose of classical music right here on Voxatani, only on Radio Free Satan, with me, Reverend Gene. Hail Satan!
Okay, Hullabaloo promo, take one.
So I just read this and that's it.
Yep, that's it. Nice and easy and go.
For the finest in surf, garage, and ska, tune into Hullabaloo World. Got you like a fish.
Dagon, just keep to the script, okay?
Okay, all right.
Okay, take two.
For the finest in surf, garage, and ska, tune into Hullabaloo, or a plague of toads will descend on your village.
Dagon.
Sorry, sorry, not sorry.
All right, take three.
For the finest in surf, garage, and ska, tune into Hullabaloo on Radio Free Satan.
Finally.
I hate it.
This is Citizen Matt. Join me and Dagon for the finest in surf, garage, and ska. It's Hullabaloo on Radio Free Satan.
The podcast you are listening to is brought to you through Radio Free Satan. To get the new episodes of this show downloaded automatically to your PC or mobile device, you can subscribe to this podcast and your other Radio Free Satan shows too, by using iTunes or Stitcher or other subscription means. To find out how, go to RadioFreeSatan.com and visit the individual page for this program, where you'll find the subscription links for iTunes, Stitcher, and more under Subscribe. You can also rate and review the program on iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you for your support of Radio Free Satan, and now back to the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Infernal Legion podcast. This is the segment of the show. We're going to jump into some news that affects active military service members and veterans across the world. And Rick is sticking around with us to give his two cents on some of this stuff. I want to start off with on August 28th, so roughly 2 weeks ago, the new Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, who has some massive shoes to fill, considering he is replacing the God of War himself, General Mattis.
Yep.
He held a press briefing along with the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Joseph Dunford from the United States Marine Corps, and it was the first press briefing from the Pentagon in quite a while. It had been a long time since they had a press briefing, and that was one of the first things that Secretary Esper addressed, is that he wants to start doing regular press briefings again. Now, I know a lot of this stuff just sounds boring, especially to service members trying to watch it, but you actually do get a lot of good information, and you get to figure out where the priorities for the Pentagon are kind of lining up. And that was one of the things that hit me with this, was he talked about having a meeting with regional heads in the Indo-Pacific region, people who are dealing with like China and things of that nature. And they really made it sound like that was the focus of their the entire focus of the Pentagon right now was on things like China, Iran. And it wasn't until the press started asking questions that Afghanistan was even brought up. And honestly, I find that a little disconcerting, if I have to be honest, because we do still have soldiers and sailors, airmen, Marines deployed to Afghanistan, actively engaged in combat right now. Even though we're having peace talks with the Taliban, it really sounds like there's not a lot of focus being applied to where we actively have troops engaged.
Who had the fucking great idea of Camp David, but that's another story.
Yeah.
But they did mention it, like I said, when the press started asking questions. And so here's the slippery slope we're in, and I'll ask you guys your opinions on this. But on the one hand, I think everyone wants the war to end. It's been going on for 18 years now. It's a long war. It's had a lot of casualties on both sides. And it kind of doesn't seem like we really have a direction of where we want to go with that war anyway. And so, obviously, it's been all over the news. The president started his peace talks with the Taliban. And the Taliban wants us all gone. Obviously. They don't want a single American person, any American personnel to remain in Afghanistan. But of course, and we mentioned it earlier that, you know, it was not the first time the Twin Towers were attacked on September the 11th. And most of those attacks were from Osama bin Laden, who at the time was holed up in Afghanistan being protected by the Taliban. So what the secretary and the chairman said was pretty spot on. We don't want Afghanistan to be a place where terrorists can hide and continue to attack the country. So the kind of debate here is, do we leave a counterterrorism force there, or do we just appease the Taliban and pull out completely and run that risk? What do you guys think?
Based on their past, no, we have to leave a task force.
Yeah.
If not, you'll have the same thing we had when the Russians left there. They declared we were actually helping Afghans at the time and helping bin Laden at the time, but they declared total victory against the Russians at the time.
Yeah.
And if they can take the Russians out and the U.S. out, then that just goes more to credibility for them, gets them more followers, and if we leave there, I think we're fucked.
Well, it's also the perfect area, I mean, for all of this stuff to just continue to pop up and grow. I mean, there's so much of that area that we can't monitor, we can't patrol, there's so many hidden caves, there's so many areas where these groups can get together, where they can meet, where they can practice, where they can start pushing their agendas, and then they start growing again. I mean, it constantly happens, you know, every time we turn our backs.
Well, the problem with over there, and I've learned it through being over there twice, is you get an uneducated group of people that are going, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm cold, and I need shelter. And you get this one asshole who's a extremist who walks around with a Quran saying, it says this, it says this, and it says this, and this is what you'll do. And now the group of people are doing it so they can get fed, watered, housed, clothed, and everything else. And that's the shit that's happening. I don't know. I'm not advocating one way or the other for either the party, political parties, or anything. But you know, something needs to be done in that way, because all those people know are what this extremist taught them. Because that's what that green book says.
I mean, this is a partisan issue.
It says to do this. It says to do that. It is partisan when you have one side saying, well, we want to help the people. The other side that says, well, let's just go blow the fuck out of them.
I mean, regardless, it's a threat to the United States. And granted, our parties cannot agree on how to fix the problem.
Right.
But, I mean, the point of the question was, do we bail out and let them claim victory? Or do we stay there and keep an eye on them? Which, I mean, obviously we need to keep an eye on them.
And my question would be, why should we have to have a place where we have to come to an agreement? It's something that needs to be done. This is what needs to be done. This is how we achieve it. Do it. Why do we got to debate? Why do we got to come to an agreement?
Well, that's why we're all...
I mean, that is what the country is founded on. Yes.
That's why we were all enlisted, because we don't get to make decisions
no.
like that. So yeah, obviously there's a lot to consider in the Afghanistan debate, and none the least of which is the next thing that they talked about, which was Iran. For those of you who don't have a map in front of you, Afghanistan is right next to Iran. So,
so Pakistan
power forever.
Pakistan's right there too, and Pakistan is a nuclear power. And if the bullshit between Pakistan and India keep going, they're going to be looking for a whole lot of fighters to come help them, and they're Muslim.
Right.
Well,
it's definitely an area where, and like I said in the last segment, we've been entrenched for a very long time, and I don't see us not being entrenched anytime soon. That's for sure. I don't know. I don't want to guess at what policy or strategy they might take on it. But it's definitely a question that I think is going to come to a head very soon.
I can't see President Trump taking a loss. He can't take a loss on lying about a fucking hurricane hitting Alabama. He ain't going to take a loss on something like this.
We'll have to see how that plays out. But they so the next question that was asked was, you know, is the crisis in Iran over? And this is the point I think that was most telling, because you rarely see the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs and Staff hem and haw at an answer and just give a
do you think we're gonna have another thing like Nixon did with Kissinger, and Trump decides to make Pompeo the damn Secretary of Defense, or Secretary of State and his National Security Advisor? That's the way Kissinger was. He did both jobs.
It's a possibility, but more, I think, pressing is the idea of whether or not we're going to go to war with Iran. Right now, it doesn't look like there's going to be a full-fledged war. But like I said, the way that the Secretary and the Chairman hemmed and hawed at that answer is disconcerting.
Yeah.
If we do, it won't be like Iraq.
Well, it's a very touchy subject that affects not only the U.S., but the EU and
everybody else.
Yeah. Because this, I mean, no question about it, this would be another NATO action. This would not be us by ourselves.
You would hope.
Should have NATO officers down in there doing closer inspections on their nuclear enrichment programs for sure.
And then getting made hostage like back in the 70s.
I think Delta Force
come better since then.
I see a point where it's going to be the Strait of Hormuz is going to become a battle point, and it's going to change hands every couple days. It's going to be a much different battle if it happens than it is with Iraq.
And that is something because a lot of people I don't think understand is that, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan were largely controlled by warlords and dictators, and not, they didn't have a strong standing military.
And I may get booed in hiss for this, but had we not taken Saddam Hussein out and had we left his ass well enough alone, we wouldn't be in half the shit we are right now. Because
he would be
controlling the area.
Well, that's the reason we put him there decades ago.
Yes, we did. George Bush, and I touched on that once. George Bush put him there back in the 60s to take over the czar that was there. Ain't it amazing that it was George Bush that took him out?
Yeah. I say a lot of people don't know that little part of the story.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I think the final and the most telling part of this press briefing, one that actually had me a little worried, is...
Hey, I like to tell stories, goddammit.
except when you're telling a joke to someone.
That's why I said I didn't want to say it. You motherfuckers aren't going to let me live that down.
Nope.
But I think one of the most telling parts was so the Secretary of Defense said that he has a renewed passion for making sure that the DoD plays an active role in helping veterans. But he also said that he hadn't even spoken to the Secretary of the VA in several years. So,
passion is not confidence, sir.
I'm wondering where that's going to go, because obviously, part of the biggest, and we talk about it all the time on this podcast, part of the biggest problem with service members becoming veterans is the transition period. And in that transition period is really when these two agencies need to be working together seamlessly to help assist with that transition. And right now, it doesn't seem like there's even communication going on.
No.
In any kind of official capacity.
No, there's too much money.
Right.
Well, I didn't even know how to get in touch with the VA when I got put. I mean, I don't know how they release them now, but I was handed my paperwork, I was handed a check, and I was, you know, told you're a civilian. Get lost.
Congratulations. And
I did not know anything about the VA hospital until 2003 when I was extremely sick and dying. And I did not have health care to take care of stuff. And somebody said, "Oh, you're a veteran. Go to the VA." And I said, "How the hell do I do this?"
Right. Yeah, they have cleaned it up a bit. Like, I had to meet with a VA rep and have them sign off on my paperwork before I was allowed to ETS. So they have cleaned that transition up a little bit. But yeah, well, I mean, only time is going to tell where how this ends up working out, but it's certainly I don't know the right word. It's certainly a little scary to hear that the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs aren't really even communicating with each other.
Here I am again, not getting political and taking any political side, but when you got a president who won't let anybody wipe their ass without him there telling them that they're using the proper toilet paper and using the proper amount of strokes and everything, and that everything has been run through him first, you can't fucking get shit done.
I mean, you can't, and I'm not going to get political, but I mean, you can't put it on one president when I've been a veteran under three presidents.
I love how everyone says they're
and I do.
No, I'm just I'm not going to pick one side or the other. I'm just saying I've been a veteran under three presidents, and that the VA sucked the whole time.
Bush,
right, Obama. Right. That's very true.
Since I've been the one that's been out the longest, because Rick, you went in as I was getting out.
Yeah, and I got out 98.
Yeah, and I got 95. So basically, I've had like four presidents. VA sucks all the time, but
it's gotten better.
But they gotta take it off discretionary spending.
They do. They've got to make it to where it's more user friendly, because people are so afraid of it because of the mistakes and the sins of the past.
And the new program that allows us to go outside the VA is an absolute lifesaver.
Right.
You know, if I had to, I mean, because I had to have a knee replacement last year, and then I've had to have two shoulder surgeries in the past 3 months. You know, and if I'd been waiting for the VA to do it, I'd still be waiting on that knee surgery.
Yeah, so we talked about that last month.
To the side a little bit. It's because he's falling over. All right, so we are running short on time. I'm going to cover one more story because this one's been in the news a lot lately. And this is another one where it can get political, but we have to remind ourselves that, you know, regardless of your feelings on anything, President Trump is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, so he gets to make these calls.
Absolutely.
So the one that I want to touch on, because this is information that service members need to pay attention to, is the new citizenship policy for children that are born overseas. What's most important here is that the policy is basically something that's always kind of been there, but the DOD kind of ignored it for a very long time. And unfortunately, now they don't have the option of ignoring it anymore. So basically, up until this point, what had happened was, if you were a service member and you met someone either in the States or overseas and had a child with them, that child was automatically granted citizenship. Mm-hmm. That is not going to be the case moving forward. Now, anyone who is either dual military or a service member with a citizen spouse who's, you know, the service member's also a citizen at the time, they're still going to be fine. There's just some paperwork to fill out, no problem. But if you have what they used to call a war bride, you're going to run into some issues.
Well, have any of you done Korean service? Well, the Navy guys wouldn't have, but Korean service or Panamanian service?
There's four main groups that cause effects. The first group is children who live with their U.S. parents abroad but who do not acquire citizenship at birth. It includes infants and children adopted overseas. That's another big one that a lot of people don't think about. Children born of non-U.S. citizens who were adopted by U.S. citizens. Those whose parents became U.S. citizens after the child's birth. And that's one that affects a lot of service members, because a lot of people will join the military as a kind of way to get a leg up on citizenship. And that's not, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's how they do it. But if your citizenship doesn't go through until after the child is born, you're still going to have to apply for citizenship for that child. And then finally, the U.S. citizens who do not meet the residence or physical presence rules needed to transmit birthright citizenship, such as a person born overseas with birthright citizenship who never lived in the United States. And so what that one really affects is service members who spend the majority of their career overseas, whether it's Korea or Europe, or somewhere else, who aren't on American soil for a long period of time. They haven't established a residency, essentially, in the United States, and so their children are automatically going to be granted citizenship.
Korean service now and Panamanian service now are cut down to 6 months. They are hardship tours.
But you can go from Korea straight to Europe without ever setting foot in the United States. So that's, you could still...
That's fine. That's fine, but you have then done your one hardship tour.
Yes,
soldier
I'm just talking about how this affects citizenship.
Well,
so if a soldier PCSs from Korea to Italy,
right?
They have not been in the United States to have residence.
Right.
So
what I like are the mama sons and dads that coming off for the soldiers $10,000, $100,000 to marry their daughter and take them to the U.S. That happens a lot too.
It does,
and I think this, what we're talking about, is what's trying to nip that in the butt.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the big points to for why it was put into effect. But I think so. One of the important things the service members have to remember if you're overseas is that the Department of Defense is not the ones who handle this. If you have a child or you adopt a child and you need to get a citizenship request, you've got to go through the Department of State. And I think a lot of service members are kind of lost in the sauce on that, because the Department of State is nothing like the Department of Defense. The forms aren't the same. The language that they use isn't the same. And hopefully, with these new rules in place, the chain of command will be briefed better on how to assist the service member in going through that process. But yeah, all of that is about to get a lot harder for those guys.
Yeah, something harder. Great.
As if service
isn't
hard
enough,
right? Well, and the article I'm reading is from military.com. It goes on to state, and I said this at the beginning, but I want to reemphasize this. If it's two U.S. citizen parents, so dual military or military and your spouse came with you overseas, that kind of thing, and you're both citizens, your child is still going to be a citizen. You just have to get the birth certificate from the Department of State. But everyone else needs to really take a look at these rules and these policies and determine what they need to do in order to have this happen, because you know, your worst case scenario is that your child could grow up essentially all the way to adulthood and then find out they're not a citizen.
Yep.
And that has happened.
It could happen. So, as if it wasn't damn hard to be an American.
Right.
Do everything triplicate, wait 15 years.
Mm. All right, guys. Rick Kohlmeyer, I want to thank you very much for coming on the program, telling us your story.
Dwayne
and Thing, it's always a pleasure talking with you guys. Anyone have any final thoughts that they want to throw out there? Dwayne.
Yeah.
Dwayne, yeah. Why? Why? I don't shut up for what? Just go ahead and say it.
Jeez.
Hey, eat my ass.
I'd rather eat Alyssa's ass.
You guys drooling over Alyssa, I tell you. I had this little debate the other day it wasn't really a debate, but I had this little conversation with another Satanist, who I won't pull his name out, who worked for ESPN, we talked about, and it was pretty funny. I'm missing a news story. Are we just out of time? Or
yeah, we're running short of time, so we're
all right. Well, that was my big wide-eyed deer in the headlight moment.
Well, gentlemen, fun. Another month down. We'll be back next month. And then in November, we have something extra special planned for Veterans Day, so make sure you tune into that one. But until next month, gentlemen, hail Satan.
Hail Satan.